The ruby red pilot light of the Fender Twin Reverb is glowing in the dark. It's time for this edition of Before the Sound Check, the program that offers you a look into the lives and careers of the people who make music happen. We talk up close and intimately with the artists, musicians, producers, engineers, the music teachers, the bus drivers, the production crews, the agents, and the managers. Everyone involved in making the music you love and who bring it to you. Before the Sound Check is sponsored by Thin Stroke Design, an award-winning communications and graphic design studio, and their new book, Love Letters, by internationally recognized typographer and illustrator Tony DiSpigna. The book highlights his classic American Spencerian-style font and lettering designs, the kind you can't do on a computer. That's Love Letters, available on Amazon.com. And now your host, Tony Sarno.
Thank you, Ronnie, and welcome everybody to part two of my interview with Willie Perkins. Willie Perkins left the world of commercial bank auditing to jump headlong into the burgeoning beginnings of the Allman Brothers Band. His interest in the business of music and his association with an interesting pair of friends led him to the opportunity to go to work with the Allmans at the earliest stage of their career, and he was the tour manager for the Allman Brothers Band from 1970 to 1976. He went on to start Strike Force Management with Alex Hodges managing Greg Allman and Stevie Ray Vaughan. Willie Perkins is now president of Republic Artist Management and Atlas Records. He holds a Bachelor of Business Administration degree from the University of Georgia, and he lives in Macon, Georgia. Okay, so Willie Perkins, welcome.
Hey, good to talk to you again.
Yeah, this is great, Willie. Now, I mentioned that you have those two books. You have No Saints, No Saviors, My Years with the Allman Brothers Band. And you have your second book, The Allman Brothers Band Classic Memorabilia, 1969 to 76.
That's correct.
Now, I've read the first book, but boy, this second one sounds really, really great for those fans of the Allman Brothers.
Yeah, I think they'll enjoy it. There's lots of really good photographs in the memorabilia book of all the historical items associated with the band. You know, they have a museum here in the original house that most of the band members stayed in. In fact, I stayed there a while myself when I first joined up. But that and private collections all over the country, people have, thank God, they saved the stuff. See, we never had time to keep up with that. We were too busy running from one gig to another, so we didn't even see posters half the time or ticket stubs, any of that stuff. We had to leave that up to collectors. And like I said, thank goodness people preserved it and saved it, and it's still out there.
And you're working on a new book, is that right? The Diary of a Rock and Roll Tour Manager?
Yeah, I'm my publisher had come to me, and you know, the 50th anniversary of the band has just passed. We had hoped, my co-author Jack Weston of the Memorabilia book and I had hoped to do something with the band's blessing for the 50th anniversary, but they were kind of hesitant to get involved. Of course, we had the two tragic deaths close together there of Butch Trucks and Greg Allman, so that never came to fruition. So just recently I decided to go ahead on my own and do a kind of chronological, it'll be somewhat similar to the first book, but not the same recipe exactly. I'll be doing it in diary form, which will be in chronological order of various gigs through the years that were historical or that were just average gigs, and what all went into being there. Of course, we'll have Fillmore East and Atlanta Pop Festival and Watkins Glen, all the big famous outdoor shows they did, plus the little bread and butter gigs, the college gigs. It'll just be, like I said, kind of a day by day. If I had had time to write a diary, that's what I would have written in it.
Now, Willie, bands have a certain relationship with each other, and as a road manager, were you one of the boys, or did you have to play the bad guy some of the time?
Well, You know, there's so many ingredients to go in that. I guess the original daddy of a band is of course the band leader, and Dwayne was the natural band leader and father figure of the band. But then you've got a manager involved, a personal manager, who is, of course, he's not out there day to day. He's back in an office doing the overall career planning. And then
who was that?
That was Phil Walden. Phil Walden, Artists and Promotions. Of course, he was also the president of Capricorn Records. And then you have a tour manager who is actually, there day to day. Nowadays, they have accountants and assistants to assistants, and they have 30, 40 people on the road doing what I did by myself, and every other major band that a road manager did.
Were you close friends with the guys? Was there anybody in particular because I know in my experience with my band and stuff, the rhythm section kind of hangs together and they'll room together and things.
Yeah.
Those guys have it.
We were a family. You know, it's kind of a cliche to say the Allman Brothers, brotherhood and sisterhood, but we were literally like a big family. I mean, there was, it all wasn't peaches and cream. You know, you're working out there, working your butt off, running up and down the country. So there's some friction, but at the drop of a hat, we would all defend each other in a time of need, and we literally loved each other. It was, I've been around other bands, and I've seen that it doesn't go that deep all the time, but this was literally a brotherhood and a family.
When he cut his solo album, Was anybody's nose get out of joint because of that?
Not really. He had some songs that he was, he had a really prolific writing period there in the mid-70s, and he was writing a lot of songs that were just not the typical, what you would think would be an Allman Brothers songs. And he had big orchestral arrangements with horns and strings that he thought about, and so... he had everybody's blessing to go off and do that, and he did several solo albums. And of course, Dickie Betts, who was probably the biggest country influence in the band, he did a solo album back in the 70s at the time. So I remember the year 1974, we did a huge tour with the Allman Brothers Band in that summer, playing outdoor stadiums, just big, big bucks, big venues every night. But in the spring and fall of that year, Greg did a solo tour, and in the fall, Dickie did a solo tour. And of course, Greg's solo tour, he had about 29 musicians on stage at one time. He had strings and horns and backup singers, so. Completely different thing.
Well, Queen of Hearts, I think, is probably one of my top favorite songs of all time. We're going to play a little bit of that because for the younger audience, they're probably not familiar with it, but it's off of Greg's album called Laid Back.
Always happy, never sad.
Laid Back was a classic, man. There was Multicolored Lady is another favorite off that one. And, of course, the Jackson Browne song, These Days.
These Days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What a great album.
So where was that cut, Willie?
You know, most of it, I'm trying to remember now. I think most of that was actually cut in Macon at the Capricorn Studios. Now, the strings and all were overdubbed, probably in New York. So, but I don't.
Oh, is that how it worked?
I don't think the string section came down to Macon. My memory's a little hazy on that, but I think most of the basic tracks were done in Macon.
And right around the time that I met you, 96, 97, after I did that first album, Jimmy Knowles was in my band for a while. And,
oh, yeah.
And Jimmy played on that record, didn't he?
He did. Pretty sure he did. He was in the band Sea Level that was an offshoot of the Allman Brothers with Chuck Lavelle and J-Mo and Lamar Williams. And Jimmy Knowles was in that band.
And I've come close to the family for a long time. I first met Jack Hall from Wet Willie up in New York. He used to play at Kenny's Castaways where we were playing.
Yeah.
And then we played together for a few years in Atlanta.
Right.
And his brother Jimmy's here. And can you talk a little bit about Macon? I know Macon, a lot of people don't know, but Little Richard was from Macon, wasn't he?
Little Richard was originally from Macon. James Brown was not from Macon. He was from Augusta, but he did spent a lot of time in Macon with him. Some of his very early recordings on King Records were actually cut in Macon at a radio station. But
how did Macon become that hotbed of great music, Willie? Do you have any idea?
Well, as far as the Southern rock part, the Capricorn, bands, Phil Walden, the record label owner and manager of the Almonds, and of course Wet Willie and Marshall Tucker and other bands. When he was a college frat boy, he would hire black bands to come play the fraternities, and that expanded where he was booking black bands all over the South to play colleges. Back in the 60s, if you were a Southern college boy, you had a frat party, you pretty much had a black R&B soul band playing. And so he built this huge black booking agency off of that. And then, of course, later he managed Otis Redding. And originally Capricorn Records was going to be an R&B label, but, of course, we know that Otis Redding died in an accident, a plane accident. And at that point, Phil decided to make it a rock label. And of course all the bands, the term Southern rock hadn't been invented at that time, but as Phil signed more and more bands from the South, the term Southern rock cropped up, and Capricorn and Macon there became a hotbed of it.
Now, you got there after Otis Redding, right?
Yeah, Otis passed in December of 67. Of course, I was close to Twigs at that time, and Twigs was working with the Capricorn band, so I was around all of it. I just wasn't an employee.
And then you started a management company with Alex Hodges, and Alex, wasn't he Otis's manager?
No, Alex was a college friend of Phil's. And he started a booking agency there in Macon that Phil owned. And of course, later on, Alex became the owner of it and then branched out on his own as a booking agent. And after the Allman Brothers had broken up for the second time, Alex Hodges was trying to get Greg's solo career on track. And that's when they called me and asked me to come back in. And of course, I was hired to go on the road with Greg and then be his co-manager as well.
And then you had he had 38 Special, Greg Allman and Stevie Ray Vaughan. Isn't that right at Strikeforce?
We did not have 38 Special. Now, Alex booked them through his booking agents, but not as a management.
But Rodney Mills produced that hit single for Greg called "I'm No Angel," and hey, Rodney's a friend of mine. He's cut a few sides of mine back in Atlanta, and that's a great record. And we're going to play a little bit of that right now, Willie.
Okay, great.
"I'm No Angel." So what year did you guys start Strikeforce with Stevie Ray Vaughan and Greg Allman?
I came on in 83. I think my first time on the road with Greg was in 83. And it was kind of a shock because he was playing like little nightclubs and small venues. He was really starting off at the bottom again after having, you know, when I was involved playing stadiums and ballparks and Madison Square Garden, and so it was kind of sobering to go out there with Greg and, you know, see him struggling. And to me, he had never looked or sounded better. He had problems. He had substance abuse problems, but we were trying to work through it. He had IRS problems. He had really severe financial straits at that point. And we were trying to get him a record deal, and nobody was interested. Of course, Southern Rock had pretty much died out during the disco era. A lot of people just didn't want to take a chance on Greg. And we finally got that song. Somebody submitted that song, "I'm No Angel," to Alex Hodges. And he and I listened to it. It sounded like something Greg would have written, and it was kind of autobiographical. It was written actually by a cat from England. I believe his name is Tony Colton. Anyway, we took that, we demoed that song and took it around, took it to Epic Records in New York. One of their promo men said, you know, I can get that record on 200 radio stations at the drop of a hat. So they took a shot with us, and it was a big hit. The video was a big hit, and it really kick-started Greg's career again.
And Rodney Mills was the engineer on a lot of the Skinner stuff, and so he was the perfect candidate to produce, and he produced a great record.
Yeah, the label really wanted Rodney to produce it, and I can remember Greg and I flying out to L.A. because Greg didn't know him. He knew his work, but he didn't know him personally. But I remember flying out to L.A., and we met with Rodney and some of the label folks on the West Coast there, and you know, everything went well. Greg was fine with him producing, and so they got together. They did that album, I'm No Angel, self-titled album, and they did a follow-up album too, which did well. But by this time, it was approaching the 20th anniversary of the Allman Brothers Band formation, and we were all start thinking about getting that back together again for 20th anniversary reunion.
I recently saw you on a documentary about the Allman Brothers, Willie, here in Nashville. I think it was a local station called The Circle, something like that. Anyway, could you tell the folks a little bit about the documentary?
The first documentary is called Song of the South.
And what does that have on it?
That has the beginning of Dwayne and Greg's career from Garage Band in Daytona Beach to the Almond Joys and Hourglass, and then eventually the Allman Brothers Band. It goes up to Dwayne's death, and then the second one is called After the Crash, which I didn't like that title, but because it had connotations of Dwayne crashing his cycle, but that wasn't their idea. But anyway, the second one picks up there and goes through the you know, modern day Allman Brothers up to the early 2010, I guess. Forget the last concert.
Okay, so Willie, it looks like we're just about out of time again.
That was when you're having fun.
It was great, Willie. Now let's make sure people know where to get your book, No Saints, No Saviors, My Years with the Allman Brothers Band, and your second book, The Allman Brothers Band Classic Memorabilia, 1969 to 76.
The memorabilia book, as the title would indicate, is more or less a coffee table picture book. Has some text and some interesting commentary, but mostly it's photographs, it's some of the band's original equipment, guitars, amps. It's tickets, T-shirts, programs, posters. Got some of my old accounting pages in there. It's a whole gamut of the band, pictorially speaking. So the No Saints book is a narrative, and the other memorabilia book is more of a photo book.
And where can they get those?
Both of them online with Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and of course Barnes & Noble store. If they don't have it on the shelf, they can get it within like 24 hours. But a lot of people like signed personal copies from me, and you can get those by looking up William Perkins on Facebook. Send me a private message, and I'll give you all the details on how you can get a book by mail signed.
Well, great. Willie Perkins, it's great to talk to you, and we'll hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay, great. Thanks, Tony.
Well, that was a lot of fun talking with Willie. I've been pretty close with the Allman Brothers camp over the years, going back to opening up for Dickie Betts back in the 80s, a place called My Father's Place up in Roslyn, Long Island. And then when I came to Nashville, I wrote some songs with John Jaworowicz, who co-wrote a song called End of the Line for the Allman Brothers with Warren Haynes And I also recorded a song that those two guys wrote called Who to Believe. And then Jimmy Nalls, who was on Greg's solo album, Jimmy was in my band for a while. And actually, Willie got me this gig up in Ohio back when I did that first record, a place called Route 33 Rhythm and Brews up in Wapaw, Kaneta. Still one of my favorite clubs of all time. And we still play up there. And since Willie managed Stevie Ray Vaughan, it'll be great to do another interview with him and talk a little bit about that period of time. We did one show with Stevie Ray. I opened up for him in 1985 up at the Capitol Theater in Passaic, New Jersey. And that was an amazing show. I've seen a lot of that turn up on YouTube. Not us, but Stevie Ray. And he was a great guy, too. I'm Tony Sarno. Thanks so much for listening. I'd like to thank Ronnie Lake, Hippie Radio 94.5 in Nashville, and our sponsor, Thin Stroke Design, an award-winning communication and graphic design studio with their new book, Love Letters, by internationally recognized typographer and illustrator Tony DeSpina, available on Amazon.com. You can reach me on Facebook and Instagram at Tony Sarno Music and on my website, TonySarno.com. See you next time on Before the Soundcheck.